You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Well, good afternoon, friends. Welcome to a special edition of Prosperity for God's People. This afternoon, we are talking with Dr. Al Brooks, who retired from practicing medicine 20 years ago to trade his own account. Dr. Al, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I was very intrigued for a number of reasons when I read your article this month in Futures Magazine, and as I recall, the title was 5 Minutes to Fame in the E-mini. How long have you been trading the markets? 20 years, right?
I've been trading for about 20 years now, yes.
How did you make the transition?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I went to medical school at the University of Chicago, and the entire time that I was there, I was wondering if I should, in fact, instead be on the board of trade, trading bonds off the floor. And unfortunately, I stayed with medicine, which, I mean, it was fine. I enjoyed practicing medicine, but I much more prefer trading. And most traders, I think, start with trading as an avocation. They dabble in it. And unfortunately, avocations cost money. You know, if you play golf, you know, that's an avocation that costs you money.
Unless you're Tiger Woods.
Unless you're Tiger Woods, that's right. But most of us, well, for him, though, it's a vocation, not an avocation. And that's the point I'm making. At some point, if you're going to do it instead of some other way to make money, you have to change your outlook. And, you know, it becomes a vocation. And instead of costing you money, you're making money.
And that's what 95% of traders, or so the statistics say, fail to do.
That's right. I'm sure the vast majority of people are trading as an avocation. They're doing it for the thrill and out of curiosity, and they never make the transition.
So did you just wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm gonna, or did you ease your way into it?
Well, you know, I lost money for years, and
now they're again, that you're saying things that sound very familiar. I hear this from so many traders.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, but that's pretty much all good traders. They go through years of losing, and if you feel like, you know, you can see something that works, and it's some personal trait that you have that's preventing you from capitalizing on what you're seeing, it just takes a long time of self-analysis to be able to make the transition and get rid of the bad habits that prevent you from making money.
Because during that 2 or 3 year period of time, or however long it is for each individual trader, as you go through that development process, one thing that doesn't change during those 2 to 3 years is the chart itself.
That's really true. Let me say that for me it was more like 7 or 8 years of losing money. But I wasn't trading full-time. I was still, when I started trading for the first few years, I was still practicing. And then I quit practice, raised my kids. I stayed home to raise my kids. And while I was staying home raising the kids, I started trading more actively. And then for about 15 years or so, I've been essentially trading full-time.
One of my regular daily guests, his personal physician, is he literally runs between patients back into his office to check his trades. He trades throughout the trading day and sees patients.
Yeah, I briefly tried that, and that was long, long ago, and my concern was that the people I was trading against were people from Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, and they're not out there doing two jobs at the same time, and they're intensely looking at their computer screens, and they're very, very smart people, and I decided that if I really wanted to be able to take money from their accounts and put the money into my accounts, I just had to, sit down in front of the computer screen with nothing else going on, no distractions. I frequently refer to myself as something of a hermit. When I trade, I'm in a small room. All the blinds are drawn. The television is off, and I have several large monitors on my desk, but I keep them all turned off. All I have is a single laptop computer with a single chart on it, and I just watch that chart throughout the day, and I just look for price action, and I take typically 10 to 15 trades a day, and I scalp out just a little bit, like 4 ticks per trade, risking very little per trade, and it suits my personality.
Now, I've read your article, I don't know, probably 5 times. I think it's only been out a week. And at the end of the article, you state that, well, my trading method is somewhat difficult to quantify, but it is, in fact, rather simple. So just from reading the article without being able to ask you any questions, I attempted to put some of the things into practice that you talk about in the article this week, and I had mixed success. But I will say this, I come from a background of many indicators. Now, I believe in the magazine, you, or in the article, the screenshots that you showed, those were on a TradeStation platform, correct?
That's right.
I mean, if you hit insert and then click indicator on TradeStation, I've never counted them, but there must be 100, if not 200 indicators in there.
Oh, easily. Plus whatever ones you create yourself.
Oh, and we've all created a few of those.
Right.
Now, did you immediately go into trading the simplified method, or did you go the roundabout route that most traders take and experiment with every possible indicator and combination of indicators trying to find that holy grail?
Yeah, I think everyone starts by reading books, reading articles, and going to conferences, and but every resource that a new trader will encounter will be pushing indicators of one kind or another. So I think anyone who starts trading will immediately assume that the only way you can make money is by relying on these indicators. But every indicator out there is derived from price. So if you get really good at reading price action, what's actually happening on the screen in front of you, you don't need indicators. I can see all day long where divergences are taking place, but I don't need to look at an indicator to tell me that there's a divergence. And in fact, I don't care, because I'm trading simply off what I see on the chart in front of me. And guys on the floor, Tom Baldwin, he trades how many thousands of contracts a day. He's making money trading off the floor without a computer screen. He's on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. I don't know if he still is, but he was for many, many years. And, he's making a lot of money, and he's not using any indicators. He's trading price action, and he's doing it based upon his feel. I'm doing it based upon looking at bar charts. But you don't need anything else.
Now, his method would be called reading the tape.
Yeah, well, he's more just feeling the flow of on the pit. He's just feeling the order flow. There's no tape for him to read, but that's essentially what he's doing, but he's doing without a tape.
Now, you said bar chart. Did you actually mean candlestick chart?
Well, I can do it either way. Sometimes I flip my candle charts into bar charts.
Okay.
Because sometimes the candle charts are noisy. Also, if I flip into a bar chart, the compression is tighter, and I can see 2 to 3 days at a time. And it's easier to see trend lines and longer-term trends. But most of my entries are right off candle charts, and my screen holds about a day and a half worth of 5-minute bars.
Now, I'm on a big monitor here, and I've got a 5-minute chart up of today's action, and mine only goes back to about 11 a.m. exchange time. I guess I guess that's just a matter of how you scale the chart.
Right. How wide you make your bars.
Is there anything else you use? Any moving averages, pivot lines, Fibonacci?
No, I don't use, well, I mean, I eyeball Fibonacci numbers. I'm aware of them. I use a single moving average, which is a 20-bar exponential moving average, but it doesn't really matter what moving average you use. You can use a 15-bar simple moving average. You can use a 30-bar weighted moving average. I mean, you can use anything. I just use it more or less as a guide. And, you know, whatever moving average you use, you'll become accustomed to how price reacts near that moving average. You know, what's more important is the price action itself and not the moving average.
I know there's a lot of listeners out there scratching their head going, wait a minute, I bought all this software, I've got all these indicators, I've invested all these hours, and here's a guy telling me he successfully trades the market every day just watching price.
Right.
Well, what can you share with us about how you do what you do?
You know, I've actually written a number of articles for Futures Magazine, and they had me do a one-hour PowerPoint presentation with audio the other day for a webinar.
Oh.
Which was new to me, but and they said they're keeping it up on their website for a few months. I visually look for trend lines all day long. You know, little trend lines. Some trend lines are just 2 to 3 bars long. Some of them are, you know, 2 to 3 hours long. And I'm always looking for my favorite trades are failed moves, a failed breakout that immediately reverses. So, for example, if a market is selling off all day long, there will be people buying all day long. And what I do is, instead of taking the buy signals, I look to where I think they would be placing their stops to exit, and I place my entry order to go short at that location. So I'm looking for people who are trapped and have to get out. So in a bear trend, I know people will be buying, and that'll make the bars go up for a few bars. Chances are they will not make money. The market will reverse back down into the direction of the trend. I figure out where I would be placing a stop to exit a long position if I were going long, and instead I place an entry order to go short at that location. So that's pretty much what I do all day long. I'm just looking for little trend lines, big trend lines, and looking for the market to break out. And I figure out where a person would be placing a protective stop if they entered on that breakout. And I will go in the opposite direction at the location of their stop. I also look at swing highs and swing lows, you know, prior, you know, highs and lows earlier in the day. And if the market goes beyond those highs or lows, I will be looking I would be looking for the breakout to fail, and I will place an order to reverse on the failed breakout.
Now, on individual trades, you look to scalp roughly a point, 4 ticks.
Right, 4 ticks.
And I think you commented in your article that you know, 2 points a day. Now, you say you're placing 10 to 15 trades a day, but simple math tells us that 2 points a day in the ES is a pretty good living. 2 points,
well, absolutely.
Net. Because if you're trading on intraday margins of $500 and a point pays $50, simple math, that's a 10% return on your money.
Well, absolutely. See, I don't look at it. I don't use those numbers. But anyone who can consistently make even 1 point or 2 points a day trading the E-minis, if they can do that, if I were them, I would not be thinking about anything other than increasing volume. So, you know, try to get up to 2 lots, you know, 3 lots, 5, 10, 15, 25. You get up to 25 contracts, and if you're averaging a single point a day, you know, it's, you know, $1,200 a day. And, you know, the average range is over 10 points a day. So, you know, to me the key is, you know, developing some techniques that are consistently profitable, taking the best trades, and then working on volume, you know, trying to increase your volume. One reason, you know, some guys trade other index futures contracts like the Russell or the Dow, but they, you know, they can only handle a certain amount of volume before you start getting bad fills.
That's true.
Whereas the E-mini, the reason why I trade the S&P E-mini is because it can handle huge volume. So I can consistently get really good fills with no slippage.
Another thing interesting about your style of trading, almost every one of my daily guests and almost everyone I think I've ever interviewed on this radio program, and we talk to a lot of traders, everyone's always trying to buy or sell on a limit. You're buying and selling on a stop, correct?
Absolutely. I'm always entering on stops, because if you're buying on a limit, that means you're buying as the market is dropping, and that's fine if you use a wide stop. What I like to do is I wait for the market to reverse. So what I want to do is I want to buy one tick above the high of the prior bar, because then the market is showing me that that it has a certain amount of conviction to go up. And if I'm buying where people on the short side will be stopped out, I know that there will be a lot of traders who will be forced to also buy, and that makes it very likely that I'll be able to scalp out with a profit. So I'm always entering on stops instead of on limits. I mean, when I first started trading, I used to enter on limits, but if you just sit down and study a 5-minute bar chart and think about entering on stops, you'll see that there are just entries all day long on a 5-minute bar chart. There are on an average day there are probably at least 15 entries where you can enter on a stop, have a contained risk, always less than 2 points. Most of the time, the trades will rarely come back even 4 ticks, 1 point. And because of that, that's how I trade. I want the market to take me into the trade. I want to be, it's like surfing. I want the wave to be going my direction, pushing. I want there to be force behind me.
Gotcha. So if you're buying, for instance, one tick above the high of the previous candle or bar, are you limiting yourself to a 4-tick stop, or are you giving yourself room, say, one tick below the low of the previous bar?
It depends. If the bar is tiny, I will probably go 2 ticks below the low of the prior bar, because a lot of times the market will go 1 tick below just to run the stops.
Mm-hmm.
But only under very rare circumstances would I ever risk more than 2 points.
And you're comfortable risking 2 points to scalp 1 point?
That's right, because most of the time, if you do the math, you have to win at least, you have to have at least twice as many winners as losers for that to work out.
Right.
But most of the time, first of all, if you're doing it right, you're going to have a very high winning percentage, and your losers won't be for 8 ticks. Most of the time, your loser will be for 2 or 3 ticks, because you'll be moving your stop up as the market goes in your direction.
So you do trail your stop?
Absolutely, yeah. So, for example, once the market has moved 5 ticks beyond the signal bar, I'll move my stop to break even. And I will swing some contracts. If I feel like I'm buying the low of the day or shorting at the high of the day, I'll typically swing a quarter to a half of my contracts, depending on how strong I think the reversal will be.
Do you by chance still have today's chart open?
Yeah, I have it right in front of me.
Could you point out a couple of entries that you liked in the somewhere in the session?
Well, the easiest entry was the last trade that I took, which California time. I entered at 12:46 California time. There was a strong breakout bar that took place at 12:30 Pacific time, and then there was a follow-through bar, and then at 12:40, a bar took out the low of that bar. So in other words, there was an attempt to have the breakout fail, and then the bar after that at 12:45, there was another higher high. But when I saw that, I was, as I said, I'm always looking for failures, and I especially like second entries. Mm-hmm. So if the first failure is a loser, I'll be very eager to enter on the second attempt to make that breakout fail. So I placed an order to sell at one tick below the 1245 bar. The low of that bar was 1391 even. So I was short at 1390.75. That was probably the easiest trade of the day. It was one of those trades I was just sitting on. So it was a very tiny day. There was clearly no trend. So on a day like this, you know, you always have to assume that every breakout is going to fail.
At 12:45, I'm looking at exchange time. That's why I couldn't find. I was trying to go. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So that would be 14:45 then, correct? Exchange time.
Yeah. I'm California, so I have my charts on California time.
Well,
30 minutes before the close.
What I'm going to do real simple here is I'm going to switch mine to local time, because right now I'm in Arizona and we're on California time most of the year, because we
mm-hmm.
don't do we don't do daylight savings time. Okay, now I'm going to find that 12:45 candle. There we go. Low of it was 1391. Oh, and just for whatever it's worth, the wick on that candle tagged the daily pivot.
See, years ago I used to pay attention to pivots, but I no longer look at them.
Okay.
The setup for me was at 12:30. There was a strong breakout bar on big volume.
I see it.
And to me, when I see that on a quiet day like this, I'm just licking my chops, because I'm just expecting it to fail. And when I see a big bar like that, typically I'll wait for a second entry, unless there was a really strong reversal bar. And so this is just a perfect choice setup.
So at 12:45, we then got a, or at 12:40, we had a doji candle. And even
right.
though there's a little sliver of green on that doji, it's still a doji. And the way I would look at it is saying, okay, and I'm approaching a pivot, also approaching the prior high of the day. So it was in fact the 12:45 candle. That was your signal candle?
Yeah. The market tried to go down at 12:40. That bar went one tick below, that doji bar that you were referring to, that went one tick below the bar before it. So that was an attempt at making the breakout fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not succeed. So I was just, you know, waiting for the next bar, because I knew that this had a high probability of failing, and a second entry is, you know, I mean, that's as good as you get in trading.
So then your entry would have been 1390.75?
Right.
Okay.
So during the 12:45 bar, it had a down close, so that also told me that this is likely going to be a second attempt at having the breakout to the upside fail. So, you know, it's just one of those trades. You know, you just see it and you just know it's going to work. And, you know, and you just place your stop and, you know, wait for the money to come.
Hmm. You do make it sound simple.
Well, you know, it can be if you wait. You know, one thing I strongly recommend to anyone who's starting out is to look for the really high probability trades. And you know, anything that's in the middle of the range or the middle of the day, if you're starting out, I would avoid it, and I would just stick to placing counter trend trades at swing highs and swing lows. You know, look for breakouts to new highs and new lows. Look at them for to fail, and place stop entry orders, because if they fail, you're almost certainly going to make at least a scalper's profit.
I would say that the 10:05 candle Pacific time.
That's another easy trade.
That one looks And if we want to get Japanese here, we could call that a hanging man, I suppose.
Yeah. See, to me, you could trade this with a bar chart. You don't even need a candle chart. You know, the 10 bars before that were totally horizontal. So whenever you see, you know, I call it barbed wire. Whenever you see a horizontal thing with spikes all over it, you know, I always wait for a nice breakout, and then I fade the breakout. You know, everyone who bought on that 10 o'clock bar, mm-hmm. they're going to be placing a protective stop at one tick below that bar, and
right.
The next bar they got an inside bar on the 10:05 bar.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who went long on that breakout are going to place stops to exit at one tick below that 10:05 bar, so they're going to be exiting at 13:87.25.
Right.
Right. So that's where I'm going to be going short.
Hmm.
Because they're not going to be looking to buy again. You know, they just bought and the breakout failed, so they're not going to be looking to buy. So there are no buyers left.
They bought, got burned, and
the only people left in the market are people trying to get out.
Hmm.
So that's another perfect example of a failed breakout.
I didn't see in the article any reference to any websites or classes. Do you do any teaching?
No, as I said, I'm basically a hermit. I live in my at least professionally, I'm a hermit.
You know, that gives an awful lot of credibility to what you're saying, because you got nothing to sell anybody.
Yeah, I don't have anything to sell. I don't have any websites. I don't have any books. I don't have any. I occasionally write articles. And I don't tutor, and this is the first time I've ever done a radio interview.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, because I have listeners around the world, and I know their struggles. I hear them on a daily basis in my inbox, on my telephone. It is the opportunity of a lifetime if you master the art of trading. But there is, on that road to fame and fortune, there's so much carnage. And quite frankly, there are so many people out there selling strategies and systems and indicators, etc., that, well, they just don't work.
Well, you know, my feeling about that is, you know, if the people who are selling, you know, there's an old saying, those who talk don't know, those who know don't talk. most of the guys out there are selling, who are selling, if you do the math, they're selling because they can't trade. Because if they could trade, they would just crank up the volume and they would make incredible amounts of money. You know, they'd make Tom Baldwin-type money, they'd make Paul Roder-type money, John Henry-type money. Those guys aren't selling the systems.
I have one guest who's been on the show. He's called the Rumpled One. He's a bit of a computer geek kind of guy, real nice guy. Although he doesn't trade indicators, he trades on horizontal lines, kind of similar to what you're doing, but not really. He uses horizontal lines to lay out highs and lows, and he trades breakouts. That's where the similarity comes in, is that he would be trading the breakout, similar to what you do, buying on a stop or selling on a stop versus a limit. But he will make anyone an indicator. In fact, at his he's got a site where he just gives away all these indicators that he's created, even though he'll tell you up front, I don't use them, I don't need them. But people ask me for them, hey, can you make it do this, and can you make it do that? And so he has fun because he enjoys computers and enjoys programming. So when I had him on the show and I did an interview with him, I said, let me ask you a question. You make all these indicators, and I've read some of the posts on the forums, and some people really enjoy them and find them profitable, etc. I said, why do you give them away for free? And his answer, I always remembered, he said, if I need to make money, I'll just trade.
That's absolutely true.
And he was actually banned from the TradeStation forums for giving away indicators.
That's funny.
Because there's money to be made in selling indicators, so we won't get into the whole conspiracy thing behind that, but...
Yeah. Well, to me, the focus is finding a way to trade something that works and just increase your volume. Just work on increasing your volume.
It really is. It really does come down to that. So here's a man with a laptop, a 5-minute chart, a 20-period EMA, and a successful method of trading the markets. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us. Now, I know everyone's going to pelt me with emails. How do I contact this guy? I mean, your email's in the magazine, so you don't have to ask me, folks. You just need to grab a copy of the magazine. But how do we get to see the webinar?
To be honest, I don't know. You'd have to go to the Futures Magazine website. And Ginger Zagala, the publisher, told me that she was going to keep it on the website for 3 months. And it's a one-hour presentation with audio and charts.
Hmm. Well, I've got the tools.
And then I didn't charge them. You know, I just did it for fun.
You know, that's really nice of you, because, quite frankly, some of the big names that you mentioned who are very successful in trading, they're not. Do you feel any kind of a calling to share what you know to help traders that are struggling?
Well, I mean, I guess maybe a little bit. For me, the biggest motivation is my three daughters. My last two daughters went off to college, the fall. So now I have all this spare time, and after the market's closed, which is 1:15 California time, and I'm just looking for intellectual stimulation. And you know, writing articles is one way to do it. I like doing it.
I'm just scanning down the list of webinars on Futures Mag. You say you just did it a few days ago, right?
They ran it May 6th and May 7th, and they said, Ginger told me that she was keeping it up there for 3 months. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's some kind of fee deal that you have to be a subscriber to get access to to all the stuff. See, it was the Futures iTrade thing right in the middle of the screen.
The Futures Fall iTrade Show.
You see that?
I see.
That's what it was.
Okay. All right, well, I'll dig through there, and I'm interested in watching it, as I know a lot of my listeners will be, and if they need a couple bucks from me for it, you know, so be it.
Yeah.
When we think of all the money we've spent on all the other things, you know. But, again, I just, what really grabbed my attention, and I've been a believer in simple price action for a long time. Because being a radio show host, I get sent all kind of indicators and strategies and software, you name it, I've got it, I've seen it, I've played with it, I've traded with it. And there's something just always told me that, you know, it's all right there in those candlesticks. And I did learn a lot from, I've learned a lot from many of my guests. I don't want to take any of that away from any of them. They're all very successful traders in their own right. One individual that really opened my eyes to the fact that I could potentially trade price without indicators or without a lot of indicators was Steve Bigelow from candlestickforum.com. He teaches the 12 most important candlestick signals, which are the dojis and the main ones, and that kind of opened my eyes to, you know what, maybe price can tell me what's really going on. The way he puts it is a graphic representation of buyer sentiment at any given point in time in the day. So with that little bit of knowledge I got from him and what I've learned from reading your article and having this chat with you today, I think it has the potential to improve my trading.
Yeah, I hope so.
What's the chance you come back and chat with us again in the future?
I might be able to do that.
Okay, well, I'll send you an email. And we'd love to have you just to come on and just share with us. And we really appreciate you taking time out of your Friday afternoon to spend with our listeners. I know you're going to get some emails. Guys, go get that Futures magazine. Send Dr. Al an email. Thank him for being on the show. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dwayne.
Have a great weekend.
Okay. You too.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Pastor Dwayne Reeves, and his guests. This information should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed security broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions. You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.